So I'm going to sort of walk us through today HTML5, Internet Explorer 9. What I want to do is sort of take the next 75 minutes, walk through some of the new stuff in IE9, going into a lot more depth than I was able to in the 10 minutes that I had on stage earlier, and then walk us through some of the things that are new in HTML5, what HTML5 really is, because let me ask this question right now. I normally ask it a little later. How many people feel confident they could stand up on stage and tell everybody here what HTML5 is? Yeah. I won't put my hand up when I ask the question again. Yeah. I've got a pretty good idea, but it's a lot of things to a lot of people, and we'll get into that in a moment. So the plan for the walkthrough is sort of, we'll talk about some of the history and evolution of the web, where it's come, where it's gone. We'll talk about how what we've done to make the browser faster, what we've done to make the browser cleaner, the pin site stuff that I was talking about earlier, the just getting out of your way so that you can do the things, and then interoperable. And that's where we're going to dig into the HTML5, ECMAScript 5, CSS3, all of those really cool new web standards that are coming and available. So I'll just jump right in. When I think about the web in the early 2000s, right, it was all about consuming content. It was all about going, you'd read stuff, you'd get information from the web, and there wasn't a lot of interactivity. It was all about just consuming content. And then today, now you can laugh at this image, but today it's much more interactive. It's all about going and being able to provide feedback, get information. You go to Facebook and you chat with your friends. You go to other sites and you have conversations, and it's about the interaction. It's not just about consuming content. But as the web sort of continues to grow, and with the new standards like HTML5, CSS3, with new hardware that's coming online, we're going to be able to do a lot more stuff, and it's going to become much more interactive, much richer, much more graphically intense. The applications that we build today on the web sort of feel a little bit limited. They feel sort of in a box, unless you start building in Silverlight or in Flash or something like that. HTML5 is going to help remove that box, and that's one of the things that Internet Explorer 9 really does. We started back in March at Mix by releasing the platform previews, and we've released the platform previews about every 8 weeks since. When we released the beta 2 weeks ago almost now, we released platform preview 5 as well, side by side. The cool thing about the platform previews is they do install side by side. So if you want to play with Internet Explorer 9, but you don't want to go and install it on your machine because maybe you need it IE7 for your workplace, or you're hopefully not, but maybe you're stuck on IE6, you can get IE9 platform preview. And all it gives you is the platform, the web components, the web bits of what you need to build stuff. One of the other things that we did with the platform previews was we created this site, the IE Test Drive site, ietestdrive.com. And that's the place where we've put up all of our demos and samples and our experiments to see how they work in IE and how they work in other browsers. Right? I showed earlier the fish tank demo. I'll show a couple other ones today, but it's a cool place. IE9 with the beta has been awesome. The feedback we've received from folks has been fantastic. Everybody's really excited about it. The fact that we can, as developers, now build cool, awesome stuff that we're not stuck sort of with the HTML4 framework that we had before. We can really step out of the box and let our site shine is awesome. I talked about the new UI and that kind of stuff. I'll mention a couple other little things. You know, like the back button and much smaller, getting out of the way. We talk to our customers to understand how they're using the browser. And we got a lot of really interesting information. You know, most people don't hit the home button. They very rarely use it, so we moved the home button off to the side. A lot of people do use the back button. Not a lot of people use the forward button. That's why the back button is that much bigger. All right? The number of people who actually use the favorites bar is less than 10%. Right? I don't know about you, but I use it every day. It's always visible on my computer. So it's a really great experience for letting your site shine, letting you get the things done. And the browser sort of takes that step back and says, hey, you do what you need to do. So in building all around fast, we did a lot of sort of research and figuring out what goes on in the browser to really understand how we can make the browser fast. One of the ways we did that is we actually went and we took five of the top news sites in the world, and we looked at how they spend different times in the different browser sort of engines, because there's different components to the engine, from pulling stuff down with the networking stack, to going through and parsing the CSS, to going through and running the JavaScript that's on your page, formatting, laying it out, getting it all on the screen. All of those different systems have opportunities to become faster. And just because one is super fast doesn't mean your browsing experience is going to be fast. So with Internet Explorer 9, we really focused on where can we get the most bang for the buck. Now, you know, we really sort of understood by looking at this, like, wow, so News Site 1, it spends a lot of time in JavaScript. But look at, like, News Site number 5. It doesn't spend anywhere near as much time in JavaScript. So it's not just about the JavaScript, right? In IE8, we did have maybe not the fastest JavaScript engine out there. We'll see in a sec. But there are other places where time is being spent. So we did go and build a brand new JavaScript engine. That brand new JavaScript engine compiles your code and runs that much faster, right? Over on the left, at about 3,800 milliseconds, is Internet Explorer 9, or sorry, Internet Explorer 8, all right? All of the other browsers, like all of these guys, these are the other modern browsers. IE8 was worlds away. IE9, Platform Preview 5 and beta, it's right here. The difference between us and Chrome 6 is like 77 milliseconds, right? The difference there is absolutely minuscule, all right? Go try and see a difference in 77 milliseconds when the actual entire time for that test to run takes upwards of 70 seconds, all right? We're talking very little time difference between these browsers. We've brought the JavaScript engine onto the same level as all of the other JavaScript engines. With IE8, you know, this is how it worked. You'd go, you'd pull the source code down, you'd parse it, you'd run it through a bunch of things. Basically, you'd just interpret it, right? There was no opportunities for your code to run any faster. With Internet Explorer 9, we're using your whole PC to really make the browsing experience awesome. And with IE9, the way we do that is by pulling the code down, and most PCs today have multiple cores, all right? We take that code that we've pulled down and we go and compile it on one of the other cores. Then, once it's compiled, we can switch to that code, so we run that much faster because we're running with compiled code instead of having to interpret every single line. Now, we don't compile everything, and we don't run everything in compiled. We actually do a sort of a balance between the two. So we look at what's the best way to compile, what's the best way to go and run and interpret some of that code. So it's going to mean as you pull that code down, we start off by interpreting it until we've got everything available. Then we go in and interpret it, or compile it, and we're running that much faster. In our experiments that we've done, we've found that doing pure compilation takes a little bit longer for some cases, but on other websites, depending on how you're using your code, it's a little bit faster. So we use some really smart heuristics, and you're going to see those performance numbers keep getting better and better. So let's have a look at and see how specifically this is applicable. I'm going to bring up Chrome, and this is one that you may have seen before. So Chrome does a pretty decent job at this one. They get 60 frames per second because they've done a lot of work on their JavaScript and rendering engine. If you have a computer that's running IE8, I encourage you to go try this particular website in IE8. All right? Unfortunately, I don't have IE8 on this guy because can't install them side by side. But try this same one in IE9. you'll find that we get the exact same performance. Let me pop open a new tab here. I'm going to pull it up. Bring it up. We get that 60 frames per second. It looks smooth. It looks fast. It looks good. It looks great. All right? So the browser being able to just run this markup. This is just a bunch of simple HTML4 and CSS 2.1 and some JavaScript. There's no magic to this. This runs in IE8. This will run in whatever browser you're using. And it works the same in all browsers. So you can see that because the JavaScript engine is running that much faster, I'm going to get out of here. We'll take a quick look at what's going on here. So in IE8, we spent it took about 1 second just to move those images, like one sort of step. All right. So you've got the green, which is compilation. You've got purple, which is DOM manipulation. And then you've got yellow, which is the rendering. All right. So it took, and the x-axis here, this is time. And then the y-axis is amount of CPU. All right. So you can see it took about half a second to do one step of those. Now, IE9, kind of cool. Because the JavaScript engine has got that code compiled in a nice, tight loop, it just flies, right? So, barely anything, right? So in less than a tenth of a tenth of a second, we're able to get one iteration happening. Be really wary when you go look at anybody else's demos. If they've got frame rates that are above 60 frames per second, just ask yourself how many hertz your monitor is, and remember how many times your monitor is going to refresh per second, because if it's greater than your monitor refresh, it's probably not all that accurate. So something just to keep in mind as you're looking at some of these demos. With Internet Explorer 9, we're using the full power of the PC. Not only are we using multiple cores, but we're using the GPU to do the graphics rendering. Right? A lot of people, when they think about the GPU, they think about like this great gamer GPU, this really high power, high intensity GPU. But that's not always the case. Every computer that's shipped with Windows in the last 8 years has a GPU, and actually has a pretty decent GPU. My computer's not the one that I'm running this demo on, but my computer is about three and a half years old. And it actually does really well in Internet Explorer 9. And we know why IE9 is going to do pretty well with GPUs, because one of the things that we look at is through all the data that we collect when you opt into the customer experience programs, we're able to get hundreds of millions of sessions and tens of millions of users giving us information about their computers and what they're doing on their computers, all anonymously and all aggregated down into some really interesting things. So we looked at the Windows Experience scores, the graphics scores for Windows 7 and Vista users, and the majority of users have at least a 4 on the Windows Experience score. Right? If you've got a 4, you're doing pretty well for your graphics experience. So we know the majority of folks, you know, they're at 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there, and they've got a really decent GPU that you're going to be able to take advantage of that. If you're one of those maybe not so lucky people who's down in a 1 or a 2, maybe you're running a much older netbook or a netbook that's not all that great or a really, really old computer, you're still going to get all of the advantages because the GPU does much better than the CPU at any kind of graphics calculations. One of the other things that we did with IE9 in terms of performance is creating a set of new tools, APIs, that you can use to better understand and manage your application so that you can profile it in a better way. One of the things with that is it's a new API called window.ms performance. And we're working with the standards bodies, with the W3C, to create this as a standard that will be standardized across all browsers, and it'll work in all browsers. Today, we've added a vendor prefix, MS, to it so that we can make sure we get the spec stable and spec standard, and then we're not going to have multiple implementations. But in fact, we're working with the W3C on this. Google has already gone and implemented this in one of the Chrome nightlies, in the Chromium nightlies. So you can get, I think it's window.chromium performance, and you get the same set of APIs. There's still a few differences as we work through what the spec says and how everything's going to work together. But this is a way that you can actually go through, profile your code, understand what's happening, when particular objects and methods are getting hit, when your page starts the load, when the page finishes the load. It's a pretty neat set of APIs that will give you a lot of really great information into how your application is running, what's happening. You can send that information back if you want to know how it's running on your customers' computers, or you can just use it internally as you're developing your app. And because it's built into the browser, there's none of this, well, we got to wait for this event to fire, and if the events don't fire in the right order, we're not quite sure. This is built into the browser, gives you the true guts of what's really going on. All right, so let's hop over to clean with the focus on your sites. All right, so I talked about the pin site mode, right? Customers today, when they use their PCs, when they come to your sites, when your customers come to your sites, they know how the browser works. But they want their applications, like Outlook or Mail or whatever, to feel like, you know, the same as your web stuff. They want your web stuff to have that feel. They want that same experience. So we created pin sites. Pin sites is a way that you can pin your favorite websites or web applications to the taskbar. Now, I'm going to unpin my Facebook, and I'm going to unpin this, and we'll bring up IE. So I'm going to go over to Facebook. And Facebook has gone and done a neat implementation of this. Hopefully I'll get a network connection here. So Facebook has gone and done a pretty cool implementation of this. To do this, this works with your website today. If you've written a website, you need to make very few additions to it. It works with the same markup, the same existing standards-based website that you've got today. You just have to add a couple of meta tags to it. I had a complete blank there for a sec. So I drag it down. I get my buttons go to the same color. And it pulls that color from the favorite icon. It puts a nice big favorite icon here so that I've got the experience of Facebook. I know that I'm in sort of the Facebook experience. I can go and add notifications. So that, hey, this star here tells me that I want to go look at stuff. If I right-click on it, I can see tasks. And these tasks are the meta tags that you go add. So if I want to go and add or read my news, I can go click on this, and it'll open up on my news page. I don't even have to have Facebook open. I can just be like, oh, hey, I want to go to Facebook and go check out my news. All right. So it's a way that you can take your existing website, the same standards-based markup that you've got today, add a couple of lines of meta tags, and you've got it. Now, if you don't want to do that, perfectly fair, right? You're going to get a better experience. If you don't, you can just customers can still do it. They can just drag it down to their desktop. They won't get any tasks or anything like that, but they still get that experience. Well, I jumped ahead. So like I said, there's nothing that you need to do to enable it. It's just there by default. But you can enhance that experience. You can provide some custom information. You can choose what color you want your buttons. If you want the back and forward buttons to be completely different than your favorite icon, you can do that. You can just specify that with some markup. In fact, let's just take a quick peek at that. So here's a couple of things you need. First, we need the application name, and content is the site name. All right, so that tells IE that, hey, this is an application, and this is the site name. A tooltip is what shows up on my mouse hover, and then the start URL. So that's the basic stuff you need to get going. You can also programmatically pin your site to the start bar. or the start menu. All right. Great way to be able to say, hey, if you want to install this, you want to come to this website very often, great. Now, actually, let me ask this question. How many of you work on websites that face the internet? So, like, I could go hit it like it's public facing. Okay, about maybe a quarter. And so if you're doing intranet and your corporate sort of stuff, put your hand up. All right. So what did the rest of you work on? If there's no internet and intranet, I'm not sure where I'm going. There may be some secret net I don't know about here in Belgium. All right. Think about for the intranet developers, for those of you who are working on stuff for enterprises, you can build this stuff out really easily. If you've got an expense reporting app, time reporting, where I need to go and say, hey, I spent 5 hours working on this for client X. Wouldn't it be great if I could just go click on my taskbar and say, bill hours, right? Or report vacation. Well, maybe I don't want to report my vacation, but take vacation. That would be a better one, right? So to be able to go in and quickly and easily get access to the sites that you're using, the tasks that you need to do, for you to be able to provide those notifications back. Think about, as a manager, I need to go approve an employee's expenses, or I might need to go and approve their vacation time. That little star that pops up, you can just pop that on there. Hey, manager, please go approve your employee's vacation time. So there's lots of great ways that you can do that. To get the overlay on there, all you have to do is call some simple JavaScript, all right? JavaScript window.external MS site mode icon overlay. Notice that we're using the vendor prefix there because this is something that's unique to IE. MS site mode, set icon overlay, and then clear icon overlay. Adding the jump lists, meta tags. MS application task, content, name, task one. That's the task that you want to show up. Then you've got an action URI, which is host and a page. And then you've got an icon. And that's the icon that shows up. So it's a pretty quick, easy way that you can go and add that stuff to your page. 5 lines of code, maybe 7 if you're really pushing it. You can get great Windows 7 integration with your websites. All right, interoperable. This is, I think, where we get a lot more fun. When we start building the browser, right. I talked earlier, we look at how customers use it. But we also look how, as developers, we use the browser. And one of the things that we did is we actually went and wrote a tool that went and surfed across the top 7,000 websites worldwide. And we looked at what JavaScript APIs you're using to build your websites. So the number one API is index.env at 94%. GetElement by ID, number 13 at 80%. The first one that we didn't support that we found was AddEventListener at number 27, and it's 65% of you guys are using it. All right. As we build the browser out, we want to make sure that we're building out the things that you need today that you're having to work around, but as well the things that you need for tomorrow. We also want to make sure that when we go and implement stuff, it works, and it works right. All right. We don't want to have you have to go and hack stuff or work around stuff. We want the same markup to work the same across all browsers. All right. I'll say that again. We want the same markup, the same HTML5 markup to work across all browsers the same way. We want it to look the same, be the same, behave the same, act the same, everything. I'll get into that in a sec, but we're do that by working with the W3C and other standards bodies. All right, we're a member of a whole bunch of different W3C working groups, including the HTML5 working group, the SVG working group, to give you an idea what goes on in these guys. Right, like I won't read all this stuff out, but the HTML working group, this is the standards body that's working on the HTML5 spec. I'll go into it in a lot more detail, but there's over 40 organizations, 40 companies who are involved in that. There's over 411 group participants. So these are just either browser vendor developers or testers. These are invited experts like you guys. These are all sorts of different people who are building the web are sitting in a room or on IRC conversations, in email lists, talking about the best ways to do things and get things implemented really well. All right? We're also leading a whole bunch of task forces within the working group. So we're working with the HTML5 testing task force. The testing task force is actually set up before the spec, the standard, can leave and go to candidate recommendation stage. We need to have a full test suite, something that we haven't done in the past. We need two proper and full implementations. Well, how do you know you've got a full implementation of a spec or a standard unless you have tests for it, right? Like, how many of you guys would ship a product or ship a spec and be like, all right, well, we haven't really tested it, but this is all good. We're perfectly happy with it. Yay! We all know that if you write a spec, there's going to be a few things that you overlook, you didn't think about. There are going to be issues on it. So that's why we're leading the testing task force, to make sure that we get these done right. Now, when I said same markup works the same across all browsers, we really mean it. This is some screen captures of IE, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Opera, rendering the same code or almost the same code and getting different results. Look at how the dashes in IE are about equally spaced. They're about the same length. In Firefox, they actually do a pretty good job of having equal sized dashes, except for the fact they don't dash in corners. So if you've got a rounded corner in Firefox, you get a solid line. And oh, hey, did you notice on Firefox they've got the dash moz? Because they're still using the browser vendor prefix. Safari, they actually do a pretty decent job. It's not quite as smooth as you expect, but okay, fine, I can deal with that, right? But nobody has the same widths on their borders. So we need to make sure that the ambiguities in the spec are worked out and that we have a really solid spec to build upon. Because we don't want to go and ship something that, oh, hey, you know, we all did something a little different. Because how many of you guys would use rounded corners with dashes, knowing it's going to look that much different across any of your browsers, right? Probably nobody. So how are we doing that? Well, not only are we working on the testing task force, but we've also created our own testing center. In IE8, one of the things that we did is we created a really solid implementation of CSS 2.1. And to do that, the way we did that is we went and we gave our test suite to the W3C, over 7,200 test cases to the W3C. We're doing that same work with HTML5, with CSS3, with JavaScript, with ECMAScript 5, if you're familiar with that. We're giving that test suite back to the standards bodies so that all browser vendors can agree that, hey, here's a great test suite. Now, we're not going and saying, hey, this is the test suite. We're working with the W3C to say, here's our tests. Let's work through to make sure that everybody agrees on these. You can find it if you want to go check it out, and you can run these tests on your own browser, right? It doesn't have any shiny number. It doesn't go, oh, your browser gets an A or anything like that. But it comes back and it says, you passed this test, this test, this test, this test, this test, and you failed this, this, and you passed these. All right. You can see it at the IE testing or IE test drive. So ietestdrive.com. It'll link you to samples.msdn.microsoft.com/IE test center. All right. I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to go over to my other slides because let's go. This is, I think, more fun in any event. All right. So I'm sort of merging two sessions because I like doing it in HTML. It's much more fun that way. This is a session I did a little while ago. I called it Everything You Wanted to Know About HTML5 But Weren't or Were Afraid to Ask, because it's this big, crazy spec. And there's a lot of stuff to know about it. So I want I know you guys didn't come prepared for a quiz, but we're going to take a quiz anyways. All right. So here's a whole bunch of things that you've probably heard about as mentioned in HTML5. All right. There's a whole bunch of elements there: footer, header, audio, web forms, canvas spec. Okay, well, there's a difference there. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. Content, web workers, web sockets. All right. Some of them are in the W3C HTML5 spec. Some of them aren't. All right. So let's just take a quick survey. If you think footer tags in the HTML5 spec, put your hand up. All right. Header tag, put your hand up. Audio? Okay, larger group on that one. Web forms? All right, bunch. Canvas? All right, what about the Canvas spec? All right, I'm going to jump around a little bit. Web workers? Who thinks that's in the HTML5 spec? Okay, what about the web sent events? All right, Ogg Vorbis codec? Any of the video codecs in there? I won't name them all. All right. What about frames? Think that's in the HTML5 spec? That's what's in the HTML5 spec from the W3C. The rest of that stuff is either off in its own little spec or is actually not really a specification from the W3C. It's a specification that a bunch of folks have written and said, hey, we think this is sort of next generation HTML5 stuff. It's actually not. The Canvas spec, so the Canvas tag is in the HTML5 spec. The fact that you can have this Canvas tag, great. It's in the HTML5 spec. The Canvas specification, so that's the like definition of, hey, this is what Canvas should do when you draw your little turtle, and I'll talk about the turtle in a sec. This is what it should do. Web sent events, not there. WebSockets API, that's off being written by some like complete random group of folks that's not part of any standards body or anything like that. Web workers is the same thing. All of these specs are still under development, all right? And so there's a lot of opportunities and rooms for change. I'm just gonna stay here for one sec. One of the things to really keep in mind with the HTML5 specification, and I always wanna do this and I always wimp out because it's a lot of stuff to carry. But I want to bring like a standard ream of paper, you know, just like a 500 sheets of paper. And I just want to drop it on stage one day. Because one ream of paper, that 500 sheets of paper, is the HTML5 spec if you print it two-sided. The HTML5 spec, if you try and print it today, is over 1,100 pages. The thing is huge. There's a ton of stuff in there. And it's under constant development. It changes literally daily, right? In fact, I could be wrong. They may have moved some of these things out of the spec recently, all right? So when you think about the HTML5 spec, and people start talking to you about the HTML5 spec, sort of stop them for a second, say, well, what particular part of HTML5 are you talking about? It's important to understand where that is, as well as understand where that particular part of the specification is in standardization. Is it something that's been standardized and we're all pretty confident is stable and not going to change? Or is it something that's still under pretty big sort of changes? Let me give you one example of that. How many of you are designers or at least have, you know, maybe a little bit of design skill? You know what looks good and you know what's ugly. All right, so a chunk of folks. Now, I consider myself sort of, I know what looks ugly, I know how to make ugly, and I know how to make sort of maybe not ugly, but I'm not great at it. You know, if you can give me a set of tools or a set of frameworks so that I can just be like, ooh, that's a really pretty calendar control, awesome. I'm going to use that because it's to my benefit. I don't have to go figure it out. One of the things in HTML5 is the, and I'm just trying to find it on my list, is the web forms element. So that means you can take new controls, and we'll get into them in a couple minutes, but you take some controls and you can say, hey, I've got an input type, and that input type is a phone number. Well, when you say input type phone number, how should the browser represent a phone number input to the user? Or what about a calendar control? If you've used an iPhone before, you know it sort of shows up with the three little spinny doohickeys. Well, on a PC or on a Mac, and you do that on a website, should the entire bottom half of your screen show those little dials? That doesn't make sense. So for things like that, there's no really great definition of how those controls should look yet. And there's also no definition that allows designers, so the folks who are in the other track right now who know how to make something look really good, they can't override it, right? So there's some problems there. We need to get those kinds of things figured out so that when we do go implement this stuff, we're set up really well. All right, so take a quick look at the document structure of a HTML5 document. If you put the doc type on the top of your page or your tools, so if you're using Visual Studio or Expression Web or whatever you're using, you probably didn't have to remember it, right? It was just there before. And if you did have to remember it, you probably did what I did. You just go to one of the previous websites you built, or you just go online and you do file view source, you copy that line, because if you can remember it, cheers to you, that thing's ugly. The new doc type on HTML5, open bracket, exclamation mark, doc type, HTML, close bracket, that's it. Super easy, just works, all right? Overlapping tags are allowed, right? They've reduced a lot of the restrictions that existed on HTML4 and XHTML. So you can have overlapping tags. Now, they're not recommended, and I'd strongly suggest you stay away from them, but you can do it if you want. All right, quotes aren't necessary anymore. I'm going to skip the new binary attributes. I'll talk about that one in a sec. And capitalization doesn't matter, right? They've reduced a lot of the rules that existed in the past. Now, that doesn't mean that you can be like, woohoo, parents are away, we can go play. No, don't do that, right? Still, use the standards that you've been using up until now. Use that same sort of style guide. Keep doing that, because if you go start switching your style guide, or you're using one and somebody else on your team is using a different one, you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble. There's also this new thing called binary attributes. Binary attributes, when I first sat down and read the section in the book about binary attributes, I got to say I got lost like that. Because I then went to try and implement it. Binary attributes basically work by just being there. So in the particular example on screen, you say video controls. All right? So that says video, if you have a video tag on your page, it's going to show the controls for that video element. If you say video controls equals true, you're still going to get the controls. If you say controls equals false, are you going to get the controls? Who thinks yes? Who thinks no? You're going to get them, all right? Just because the element is there means it's true. You can set controls equals controls. You can set controls equals, hi, Mom. It just, if it's there, it's on, all right? So keep that one in mind, because that one kind of goofed me up. That one took me a little sort of like, okay, how do I, all right? And then remember, you don't necessarily need to put quotes around stuff. So Visual Studio, if you're using that, is going to yell at you. You know, it's going to put the little red squiggle and be like, hey, that's not allowed. Yes, it is. In HTML5, it is allowed. All right. So valid HTML5 documents. That top document, all I say is I've got the doc type, a meta tag, a title, and a paragraph. I've got no HTML. I've got no body. I've got no title. Yes, I do have a title. But I don't put the body in there. I don't put the head in there. It just works. Because one of the things that we sort of realize as we're working on the HTML5 spec is that browsers can figure that out, right? Like, ooh, look, meta tags only belong in the head. Paragraph tags only belong in the body. And all browsers, like if you try this page in IE6, this page is going to render. Try this page in Firefox 1. This page is going to render. The HTML5 spec, one of the core principles was, you know, pave the cow paths. I don't know if that's a commonly used term here, but it basically means take the things that developers are doing today, even if it's the wrong thing, even if they're doing things that they maybe shouldn't be doing, but take that and make that stuff the standard. Make that available to them. All right? Now, best practices. Again, remember what I said. Just because the parents are away doesn't mean you should throw a big party, right? You still want to make sure that you've got best practices. So a couple of things. Doc type, still want to have that. You want to have the HTML and have the language specified in there. Right? Really important for screen readers, for accessibility, because if I'm coming to your page and I see, and I've got a screen reader reading and it reads SIX, that's going to be pronounced in different languages in different ways, and it's going to have different meanings. So by putting the language in there, it helps screen readers and accessibility tools really work around that. Having the head tag, title, obviously, you know, pretty important for search engine optimization. You want to make sure you include the meta tag that sets your character set. Because if you don't set that in there, you actually can set yourself up for some cross-site scripting security flaws. How many folks have been watching Twitter over the last couple of weeks and noticed Twitter's had some WTFs? Yeah. Body tag, HTML, and just close it all out. So just like you do today, use those same things. Just because you can do things that you couldn't do before doesn't mean you should do them now. All right, there's a bunch of things that are gone. Applet, use embed instead. Big, any HTML elements that were sort of meant to specify style in the past, they've been deprecated. Now, it's important to note that they're gone, but they're still valid because core component of HTML5, it is backwards compatible. So that means that, hey, you don't have to go rip that stuff out of your code to make your page HTML5, right? You can take an existing page that you've got today and you can go add some HTML5 elements to it and it'll work. And it's an HTML5 page now. You've just created your first HTML5 doc. You don't have to go rip this stuff out. It just, you shouldn't use it going forward. All right? Blink. Well, that one's kind of obvious. Marquee. If you ever want to see a really fun one, anytime I'm ever speaking, go look at my bio, because my bio, I've got, you know, Pete's been on the web since the Blink and Marquee tag were cool. Well, every once in a while when the people who are setting up the websites, they just copy and paste my bio straight onto the web page, and sure enough, thankfully Blink doesn't work anymore, but you get this little marquee scrolling across the page, and it's kind of like, oh, yep, somebody wasn't exactly looking at their markup or testing their page. All right, there's a bunch of things that have changed. Their meanings are different now. In HTML4, they deprecated the ordered list element. Well, we brought it back in HTML5. It's back. Site has a different meaning. I'm not going to read through all of these. You guys can read them yourself. But like, they have different meanings now. Small, remember I talked about, like you noticed on the previous slide, big was gone? Well, small now references the small print license caveats, the stuff that you'd have maybe at the bottom of a legal document. That's what small now means. Still going to render exactly the same way, but it goes to more of the semantic markup. The concept of the code that you have on screen really defines what you've got going on. We've got a bunch of new elements. Header and footer, nav, article, section. Think about a blog or think about other pages that maybe a news site, maybe you've got information that you're trying to share with folks. These are really great elements for that. It sets that up for the pages that we're creating today, for the content that we're creating. There's some other fun elements, audio, video, SVG, and Canvas. I'll dive into what these guys do in a sec, but I talked about the new form elements. So form elements, we don't have an IE9 right now, unfortunately. The way the browsers sort of fall back on these, which is awesome. This is, I think, one of the most brilliant things we did many years ago. If you don't support a type, you just provide the user a text box. So that means if you say, hey, input type tell, we're just going to give them a text box. You say input type date, we're just going to give them a text box. You can then style that through JavaScript, or you can provide any other ways that you want to go ahead and do that. So HTML5 video and audio. This is, I think, one of this and Canvas are, I think two of the things that get the most attention and people can see the most sort of fun with it. But it means that you no longer need things like Flash or Silverlight to put video on a page. Now, it doesn't mean that Flash or Silverlight are going to go away for video distribution or anything like that. And in fact, you know, they still provide a much higher level of interaction with some of the videos in terms of the video streaming system that we've got that's open source, where you can go and insert commercials or you can modify the video sort of on demand. You can't do that with HTML5. With the audio codec, you've got the MP3 and the AAC codecs, and with video, you've got H.264, and in IE9, if you have the WebM codec installed, you get that support as well. Now, there is no specific definition of which codec should be supported in any of the specifications. So you're sort of going to have to play around with things a little bit. But we've set it up so that you can do that really easily. So in fact, I've got a little audio demo up here. So I've got two controls. I've got this one here, and I've got this guy here. Both of them are managed programmatically. So you can define how you want the information on your audio tag to be. I could, instead of saying by doing it programmatically, I could just add a source attribute to the audio element and get the audio on there. But I go and I say, hey, grab the var and say, hey, here's my audio file. Grab my player and say source. I set attribute, auto load. Remember those binary attributes we talked about before? Yeah, here's one of those binary attributes. All right. I just needed something else to set, so I just set it to auto load. I could have set it to hi mom. I could have set it to true, false, whatever. And then I go and do the second one. Now, this one you'll notice doesn't have controls. So just by clicking on this play button here, and all the play button does is go and say, hey, it grabs the element just like I did before, where var a player get element by ID, and I say a player dot play, and that's all you need to do. And I can go and I can hit pause, I can do whatever. By adding the controls, you actually get a full set of controls for your audio. So you can allow the user to control the audio. Now, please do me a big favor. Don't put music or sounds on pages that I can't turn off, because I really, that kind of drives me up the wall. I think it probably drives a few of you guys up the wall too, I hope. But give the users ways to be able to do that, whether that's by giving them some buttons or a full set of controls here just like this, where, hey, I can go, I can see the time in my audio, I can go and I can adjust the volume, I can turn my volume down, you know, I can turn it back up. I can say, hey, I want to go back 30 seconds, so you've got a quick skip. All right? And you can still control this one via JavaScript as well. So I can hit play here, I can hit pause here. Even though the controls are there, you can still do that stuff through JavaScript. There's a whole bunch of other things that you can do through JavaScript as well, but that's just a quick sort of little introduction to this guy. With video, you get the same sort of set of controls. Now, with video, I talked about different codecs. If you've got multiple video source files, you can either go and do the same thing that I did, where I did it through JavaScript, or you can, when you put your video source, you can put the source in here just like you would with any other image. Just like you'd put an image on a page, you say SRC equals, and you put a link to the source. But here, where I've got this optional bit, you can put other formats. So you can say source equals, and you could put an AUG video in. You could put a Silverlight or a Flash fallback in, because that stuff is only run if the first opportunity doesn't work out. Right? And it just sort of keeps going down the pipe. So I've got on here just the same kind of thing. Hey, I can say hit play. There we go. You know, a little quick clip from Astro Boy. I can hit pause. I don't have the controls on here. Again, that same concept that we could do before, we can say, hey, I want to go add the controls. I've got the controls now so that I can go and hit play or pause. All right, so video, you can get that on screen. And, you know, just to prove this isn't actually Flash or Silverlight, there you go. All right, so video on screen, high def video, regular video, whatever you want to do. It's just as easy as putting an image on your page. It's pretty cool, pretty slick. Something I really like checking out. In fact, I'll bring this up. I'm not sure how well this will go. Hopefully it won't be too bad with our network connection in here. But IMDb did a really great video demonstration that they set up so that you could go and watch movie trailers by just going and clicking. And it looks like it's not going to agree with me too much. So I'm going to go get out of here. And I'll do it a slightly different way. So when we started working with IMDb, the first video demo that we did with them was this one. This was in one of the first platform previews. We were like, okay, well, let's see what kind of video carousel that we can build out to allow folks to watch video. Well, so we get full sort of animation of the videos as they go through. Notice how, like, you go through, one gets a little bit brighter. We're using alpha channel transparency to be able to say, hey, we want to make this video really the focus. It's nice and smooth. I can go through. I'm going to go in here and, oh, let's click play on this. I'm only going to play it for a sec. Or maybe I'm not going to play it today. Oh, there we go. Notice how the video sort of came in. Look how, and I'm just going to pause this so that I can talk and we're not too distracted. Notice how you can just see through that. We've got a div there where we've set the transparency, the opacity of that particular control so that you can move through it and see. You get that really smooth feel. And I've talked to a couple of folks who, you know, particularly with the IMDb experience. Let me just stop this. That wasn't my intention. There we go. All right. I've talked with a couple of folks who, particularly with the IMDb experience, but they were like, wow, you know, this really gives me a feel that I don't feel like I'm just watching a web trailer on a website anymore. Yeah. So the question was, what decoder is that using? And this is using the H.264 video decoder for all of these. Oh, so yeah, it's using the Windows Media Foundation to display the video. So it's using Windows Media Foundation to display that video, which means it's taking advantage of the whole PC because you're really just right into the OS. It's doing the video decoding for these guys on the hardware, right? It's doing that GPU or using that GPU to decode that complex video. But what I was saying earlier is I've talked to a couple of folks who have said, you know, like, I used to watch my trailers on either Netflix or I used to watch them on YouTube, and it wasn't really a great experience. I didn't feel like I had a good opportunity, kind of like I'm at the movie theaters. Well, you know, my screen's not big enough to feel like I'm at the movie theaters, but it's a heck of a lot better than watching a movie trailer on YouTube. So you get a really cool, great experience. All right. CSS3 backgrounds and borders module. How many folks are familiar with the CSS3 spec? All right, a couple of folks. CSS3 spec is another cool specification that really lets us sort of get in and define how we want stuff to look. You can set rounded corners. So by using the border radius property, you can go in and say, hey, I want my corners to look like, to be rounded. You don't have to go and specify that, you know, in images or anything like that anymore. You can choose different values. You can choose different values for different corners. So you can actually have, hey, I want this corner to be 25 pixels. I want this corner to be 50 pixels. I want this corner to be whatever. You could even take a div and turn it into a circle if you really wanted to, right? Multiple backgrounds, so that you can have multiple backgrounds on an image. This is a really cool way to be able to specify, hey, I want images to show up in a particular way, or I want to be able to say, hey, we're having a sale on futons this week, and you can put a little futon badge up on your page, right? You could add that kind of stuff to your users' avatars if you've got users who have avatars. WAF fonts. Another cool one. Internet Explorer has supported all sorts of fonts for years. In fact, since about Internet Explorer 4, you've been able to specify any font you want, provide that font to the person who's coming and viewing your site. But it never really took off for a whole bunch of different reasons. One, the tools were really hard to use. Two, there was some DRM and rights management around the fonts that the font foundries sort of insisted on, and it was just hard to work around and work with and go find fonts you could buy. With Internet Explorer 9, you can actually go and have some really cool font stuff. Let me pull up beautyoftheweb.com. And I talked about Beauty of the Web a couple of times today, but cool site, go check it out. If you're using IE9, definitely check it out. If you're using IE8, you still get a similar experience, though we do it with Silverlight instead. I'm going to go click on experiences and see if I can find this one pretty quickly. All right, let's see. There we go. If you're familiar with the design folks at An Event Apart or A List Apart, and Happy Cog. So a bunch of guys there. One of them is Jason Santa Maria. Jason Santa Maria is one of those just sort of brilliant design folks. So I'm always kind of like, wow, you make pretty. I wish I could do that, right? But then again, his code probably looks about as good as my design work. So fair deal, right? They went and they actually built a really cool sort of show off of WAF fonts. So as we go and click this, this will take a second as these fonts come in, as we wait for this page. I'm going to just pop back over here, and I'll come back to that in a sec. But you can now specify whatever fonts you want, and you serve those down to your customers so that you can specify how you want the page to look, right? If you have a corporate logo in fonts or whatever, all you have to do is say, hey, at FontFace, you say the font family. And you can name this guy whatever you want. This Atia Pro, I could have called that Pete's font. And then you point it at the source URL as a WAF font. And then within the page, you just say font. And you can specify whatever parameters you want and the name of the font. And the browsers now will go and get that so that you can get a really great experience of showing this. Now, this hasn't quite finished loading all these things, so I'll come back to this guy. There we go. CSS3 media queries, another cool one that I've been really excited about and really happy with. How many of you guys, when you build your websites, have to build your website to work on multiple devices? So like it's got to work on a PC, on a desktop. It might have to work on a netbook with a much smaller screen. And you know, you've got people who come to it on a mobile device. A few folks. Yeah. So when you do that, there's a couple of ways you can go about it. You can build multiple sites for different devices, right? And that's kind of expensive and a bit of a pain in the butt. The cooler one, I think, is to build one great set of HTML framework and then to provide different CSS pages to different devices. So on this particular example, I've said, hey, no CSS if your screen width is less than 1,200 pixels. And if your screen width is larger than 1,200 pixels, you get the no CSS file as well. But you get the yes CSS file if your screen width is between 1,200 and 1,300 pixels. Now, that particular example I used on a previous demo. I didn't use it for this one because I tweaked a few things last night. But I used it so that when you were looking at this page, I could say, hey, I want this page to be exactly 1,200 pixels wide. So it allowed me to be able to specify how I wanted things to look and be. Now imagine you do that same thing, but you say, hey, if you're less than 400 pixels wide, you're probably coming in on a mobile device. So you probably don't want to see a bunch of stuff. So I'm just going to set a whole bunch of stuff to display none. You're probably going to set a bunch of other things to be sort of, hey, instead of having like a left bar, your center content, and a right bar, well, I might get rid of my left bar and put it below my right bar so that I've got more room for my content so that as I'm looking at it on the mobile device, I've got a lot more space to be able to go and check that stuff out. DOM selection. Kind of cool one. DOM selection APIs allow you to go through and select elements on the page just by using JavaScript, right? In this particular example, I've said document.querySelectorAll, and you can use the same CSS rules in here as you can in CSS. So I want to say, hey, give me an H2 plus a P. So it happens to be this guy. So it's, this is the P right below the H2. And when I say try it, it turns red. Because all I've done is said, hey, go grab all those guys, iterate through them, and set their color to red. You could do all sorts of other things, like I want to grab an unordered list, and I want to say the list item that's below that, and I want to grab the nth child of odd. So I want to grab every other child below that, and I want to set its color to red, right? Or I want to set its color to blue. Think about how you might use that on a table, right? No longer do you have to go through and be like, oh, hey, even odd, even odd, even odd, even odd, right? And then go change that in your markup. You can actually do that through JavaScript so that your page just gets styled through JavaScript and it goes, oh, hey, I'm just going to make my alternating lines look like this. Quick, easy way to be able to style stuff through JavaScript. Ooh. All right, CSS3 colors and opacity. Another interesting one to get added. At first, I didn't get it. I just didn't understand why the heck we were adding HSL color module. It makes, because to me, it makes zero sense. How many people like understand HSLA better than they understand RGB in the room? If you understand HSLA, put your hand up. Yeah, there's a few folks. I'm guessing you guys probably came from the print world or the design world before this. For a lot of folks who grew up in print and design, HSLA is a different way of defining colors that to them makes a lot more sense when you learn it that way. It starts by defining the hue, which is part of the circle. So if you think of a circle from 0 to 360 with red at 0 or 360, you know, green down here at 120, blue over at 240. Purple is somewhere in between, right? So that's the hue, right? Saturation is the intensity of the color, whether it's like full intensity or no intensity. And the lightness, whether it's at zero, where there's no intensity or no lightness, it's black, it's nothing. At 100% intensity, it's just pure white. Right in the middle gives you the pure color. So if we want red, I'm going to set this to 0. All right. Now, that's not a true red because I've only got my saturation set at 50. I could go up and increase that number. I could go for 120, which I think was green. All right. So as you go through and change that, it's a way of defining colors into different ways. But there's also the alpha transparency value. The A from 0 to 1 defines how see-through the color is. So I could say 0.5, and we can see that color pop in through there. I can set that. Let's change it to 0.1. All right. There's a neat way that you can go and, like, you want to tint a picture. Hey, just put a div over top of another picture, and you can add, you know, a color over top of it. It might need a little bit more than 0.1 to sort of get that tint going, but we've tinted that stuff all to the green. So it's another way that you can go and add colors and think about different ways. If you don't understand HSLA color and you're perfectly happy in RGB, don't worry about it. It's one of those things that it just adds another tool to your toolbox. The opacity property allows you to say, hey, I want certain things to be opaque or transparent. This bottom panel here, I've set the opacity to 0.5, which means it's half transparent, half translucent. I could set it at 1, and it becomes completely opaque. So through doing that, you could actually go and define, hey, I want certain things to be transparent and translucent. You can give really neat looks to things. You know, this would be a really great one to say, hey, if you've got a little bit of Photoshop skills, you could go and take an image and flip it and put the mirror down below it and set the transparency at like 0.2 or 0.3, and you get sort of that see-through reflection that you see on a lot of websites where they do all of that work in Photoshop. To do this in Photoshop, all you have to do is take an image and go flip, right? You don't have to do a lot to get it to flip over. All right. There's a whole bunch of new JavaScript stuff. How many of you guys spend a good bit of time doing JavaScript? Yeah. So ECMAScript 5 is the next edition of the JavaScript standard. All right. It was ratified back in December of 2009, so just a couple of months ago. And it basically does a couple of things. One, and most importantly, it codifies the behavior so that all browser vendors have the same behavior for the JavaScript APIs. But it also adds a bunch of other stuff as well. It adds a bunch of new JavaScript APIs that allow you to have new array elements. It takes JSON from being like, oh, hey, it's something that, you know, Doug Crockford wrote, and puts it into the standard. DOM events, it goes in and locks some of those down. In fact, IE9 has full DOM level 2 and DOM level 3 event supporting, which means add event listener supported. DOM content loaded, super cool one. This page loaded a little bit faster than I kind of wanted it to. Let me see if I can force this page to reload. No. Refresh. Let's see if that's going to work. There we go. Notice how the load event fired before the DOM, DOM content loaded fired before load. DOM content loaded is a new event that gets fired as soon as your DOM is loaded. Not necessarily all the files are downloaded, right? So you notice with those images, it took a little while for those guys to come down. Try this on your PC today. If you're running IE9 or any of the platform previews, across the network, in fact, on this network, this is a really great time to have the slow network. I'm going to bring up IE Test Drive. Let's see if I can find the DOM content loaded. DOM content loaded. So this will take a second to come up. This is the one not so fun part. All right, notice the DOM content loaded event is already fired. Like it fired right away because it had the page loaded. Now, the load event hasn't fired yet. Now, this is awesome for sites like Facebook or Twitter that are going to go and load content dynamically as my page is sort of being delivered to me. Super fun, super easy way to be able to just like, I don't have to worry about what's going on here anymore. DOM storage is something we introduced in IE8, still there. Easy way to be able to store data on a user's computer. If you want to store stuff on a user's computer without DOM storage, it means you either have to use cookies, which you're kind of limited on. You have to use things like the JavaScript, or not JavaScript, the Adobe Flash objects. There's a couple of ways, but they're not really all that pretty, and they're not standards compliant, and you don't necessarily know that they're going to be there unless you're using something like jQuery, where you can just say, hey, store this on the user's computer, and it does the work for you. With DOM storage, you can get up to 5 megabytes per site of name value pair data stored. Canvas, how many people remember Logo and the little turtle that you said, hey, go draw something, and the little turtle walked across the screen, and then you said turn left, and the turtle would turn left. Okay, I feel like a little bit of a fool for having done that. Thanks, guys. Canvas is somewhat similar to that, but it's a heck of a lot more powerful. Canvas allows you to go and grab a 2D element. So I say, hey, there's my context, document.getElementById, my canvas, get context, and grabs the 2D context. Then from there, you can do pretty much whatever you want with that 2D context. You can draw lines on it. You can draw pictures on it. You can even go so far as to draw video and images on it. And in fact, there's some really neat Canvas demos that show that off. But there's my little Canvas demo. Right? I just drew a little guy with his tongue sticking out. And all I did, this is just some of the code. This is not all of the code. But begin path, move to, and I drew a Bezier curve. All right, you can do that same thing. You can add images, and you can draw on the images. With Canvas, Once you've drawn that thing on the screen, once you've used the pen to draw that, the browser doesn't remember it. It's stateless. All right? It's a really important thing to remember as I talk about SVG here in a sec, but if I want to go and redraw this, I have to redraw it from scratch. All right? I can't go and say, hey, grab that left eye and change its left eye color from black to blue. All right? It's stateless. But you can do some really cool stuff with it. In fact, the swimming fish, that's a canvas demo. It grabs those fish and those fish as a canvas element, and it says, hey, go move this guy. So you can do some really neat stuff with that. With SVG, it's a little bit different because SVG with vector graphics, right? Scalable vector graphics is what SVG stands for. You can go and you can say, hey, I want to draw a particular shape. Well, when you put those shapes in your markup, all right, and it goes in just like any other HTML element, you get to treat them exactly as other HTML elements. I bring up the developer tools. Grab this guy, grab this, and I'm going to just grab, I'm going to refresh my page here, and there we go. On the left-hand side here, I've got the DOM. There's the SVG. Hey, there's that H2 subtitle, right? All of that stuff is just represented in the DOM. In fact, I don't like blue. I like yellow. You can change that stuff just like you can with any other HTML element. You can add events to it. In fact, I think I have an alert. There you go. So I click on it, I get the alert. So with SVG, really cool stuff. Quick, easy way, as you start playing with this, to be able to go and draw things, to be able to get things, to manipulate them. All right. And I didn't mean to close PowerPoint, so excuse me one sec while I pull that back up. So I'm going to make these slides available for you guys to check out through the conference. But Internet Explorer 9, Canvas, SVG, CSS3 backgrounds, CSS3 colors, media queries, web fonts, all kinds of cool stuff that you can check out super easy, super fast. We don't have a full list of the things we support, but if you go to the IE Developer Center at msdn.com/IE, there's a Getting Started guide there for you that shows you all of the things that we support so far. DOM and JavaScript, I mentioned full level 2 and 3 event support. We've got Add Event Listener. We've got DOM Core, Get Selection, all kinds of great things to make your Ajax applications and applications start to feel native and really be much more interactive than they ever have before. The developer tools, I talked about those real quick. There's a new part of the developer tools. It's the network profiling tab. If you've checked out Fiddler in the past and you bring Fiddler to see what's going on with your network requests, built into the browser. You don't have to go and use something that's sitting on a proxy. You don't quite know what's going on. True full support. Full support for SVG like I showed you earlier. So this is my quick wrap-up slide that I sort of have to show. Yay. You know, i9, all around fast. Using the power of your PC, we're able to get things to render faster, look and appear on your screen better, and just be a great experience. Clean with a focus on your sites, with pin sites, with a browser that just gets out of the way and lets you get to the places you want, and with interoperable, with the same markup. As you go start playing with your sites, if you're curious and you try your site and you find that things are a little bit odd and they don't render in IE9, do me a favor. Check to make sure that you're sending the same code to IE9 as you would to Firefox or Safari or Opera or anything like that, because if you do that, you'll probably find you're all set. Do feature detection instead of browser detection. You'll find it works a lot better, and it's a really good best practice. So download the beta. You can get it at internetexplorer9.be, and you can learn more at msdn.com/IE.